Hi, I'm Marianne Barasonic, and we are going to be speaking to Dr. Helen Caldicott, but she's running a little bit late. So we're going to start out the show by having a little bit of a discussion about nuclear power. We're here in Portland, where the only commercial nuclear power station recently had the tower imploded. Trojan was gone. But a lot of people are looking at nuclear power and saying, well, it doesn't produce greenhouse gases. We're running out of oil. Clean, cheap. So what do you think? Give us a call, 231-8187, and let us know. Do you think nuclear power is a good idea? Should we be bringing it back? Now, Dr. Helen Caldicott has been a very big opponent of nuclear power for many years, and her new book is Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. And I don't know if you had a chance to catch her at Powell's last night, but she gave a really nice talk there. But there's a lot about nuclear power that people are looking at and saying, this might be something that we should be looking at. We have not many options. So give us a call, 503-231-8187. What do you think? Should we be looking at nuclear power? Is this something that maybe it's just more of an emotional reaction than something that's reasonable? And so she should be here shortly, but in the meantime, I'd like to, okay, we have a caller. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, you know, I wanted to comment on your nuclear energy idea, and I think that is kind of the new way to shoehorn this form of generating electricity into our public consciousness, because we can't seem to remember as a nation anything more than a couple of months. And we forget the fact that even though there are no greenhouse gases emitted, the emissions that do come from the fission process are extremely toxic for hundreds of thousands of years. And I think it's very disappointing that as a society we are still focusing on single sources of production for electricity instead of looking at ways to decentralize our production of electricity. And I believe that that the forward thinkers in this region are going to start to develop micro generation. And I think that if you look at the economy of scale with all of the alternatives, with photovoltaic electrical generation from solar power, if you look at wind and water, and you scale that down to a micro level and have each housing development, each house, each building, everywhere generating tiny amounts of electricity, that you're going to begin to make an impact, and we will no longer need to have a dependence on one power station that generates gigawatts of electricity.
I know,
what do you think about that?
That's a very interesting idea, and I think it's one of those things that might actually even change the way that we look at our political structures, because the less power we have in the hands, even, you know, literally and metaphorically, the power we have hands in a centralized area, the more leeway we have to live our lives in ways that might be different from everybody else. And
yeah, I agree. I think that in terms of the constant fear-mongering with terrorism and et cetera, this is a decentralize the power grid. You know, if they take out a power station or if they dump out a dam, you know, the notorious they,
right.
it doesn't affect us. We've still got the ability to absorb that impact because our power is generated in our local communities instead of thousands of miles away and then transported.
And I think there is something about the way people look at themselves when you're completely dependent on an outside source, as opposed to when you have the means for you to take care of yourself. And then I think you're much less vulnerable to, like you said, the fear-mongering.
So I think that that's something that we need to be spending our money on as a nation, and developing the way to basically create that microgeneration and tap that into a grid. Unfortunately, lead-acid batteries are really the main problem there. If we could find a better way to store and transmit electricity, but isn't that what makes America great?
Right.
The ability to rise to these kinds of challenges, and I just don't accept the common line of thinking that you know, we have to wring our hands and believe that that our military is the only way to protect us. And that was my comment. I appreciate your show. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for calling in. Now, if you have an opinion about whether or not we should be looking at nuclear power, we have another caller on the line. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, in regards to nuclear bombing, does the Earth that it hits, these nuclear bombs, does that Earth ever create life again? Any kind of life, plants, insects, whatever, does that Earth, kill it dead or what?
I have been to Hiroshima, and there's a city thriving there now.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I said I've been to Hiroshima.
Yes, I heard that.
And there's a city thriving there now. It kind of blew me away, because I thought, you know, like you said, that once the bomb hits, that's it. You know, everything's going to be dead.
So they cleaned up the dirt?
They cleaned up the dirt. But, you know, that's the thing about radiation, is it's so invisible, and the effects are long-term. Like, I was in the area that's been affected by Chernobyl, and there's millions of people living there, and they've got all kinds of diseases, but it's extremely difficult to say, oh, well, this cancer came from the radiation, because there's no markers, there's no way of saying that. So even though it's not like a scorched earth sort of thing, there's still a tremendous amount of increases in diseases, but it doesn't look awful.
So it can't be cleansed then. Is that what the bottom line is? It really is not cleansed of radiation?
You know,
I don't mean to put it down the spot. It's been on my mind.
Right.
Well, that's all.
Okay.
Thank you
for calling. And do we have another caller? Okay. We have another caller on the line. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? I think we lost that one.
Hello?
Hello? We're on the air?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. I think with the nuclear power, that definitely you have to look at that whole cycle of getting the uranium out of the ground, the tremendous tailings that are left over, the sickness of the people that are doing the digging for the uranium, the processing of it. And then by the time you get done with building a plant, you've got a plant that's only good for somewhere between 30 and 50 years, because of the way plants work, because the metals get so hot, they become brittle after about 30 to 50 years. That's why we're beginning to shut down plants now. And so then you got to do something with that. And, of course, you have the problem with the fuels itself.
Right. That was one thing that was really interesting when Dr. Caldicott was talking last night, is she was saying, you know, when they say that the power plants don't emit greenhouse gases, that's technically true, but there's a tremendous amount of greenhouse gases produced when they mine and enrich the uranium.
Right.
And then in the decommissioning process, you also have a tremendous amount of fossil fuels being used for things like transportation and keeping these fuel rods cool for, you know, how long? Tens of thousands of years?
Right. So the whole cycle, it has to be done actually for any manufacturing cycle, and that is dirty, and almost all manufacturing cycles are. I've got a question for you.
Okay. You know, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to cut you off, but she's here, and so...
Can you ask her a question?
Sure.
Okay. It's going to be in the form of a quiz. When Eisenhower left office, how many nuclear bombs did the United States have? 1, 2, or 10,000?
Okay, so the question is, when Eisenhower left office,
how many nuclear bombs did the U.S. have?
How many nuclear bombs did the U.S.
1, 2, or 10,000? Maybe that was the industrial complex he was talking about, the military industrial complex.
No, I don't know.
Okay? Okay, you got it?
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, so Dr. Helen Caldicott is here to speak with us for over 35 years. She's been one of the foremost anti-nuclear activists in the world, and she's been named by the Smithsonian Institution as one of the most influential women of the 20th century. She co-founded Physicians for Social Responsibility, has received 19 honorary doctoral degrees, and was personally nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Linus Pauling. She's written 5 books, and she's here at KABU to talk about her latest book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. Helen, welcome to KABU.
Thank you very much.
Now, you know, I think there's a certain amount of complacency around nuclear power. Many people here in Oregon worked hard during the 80s and the 90s to get rid of our one nuclear power plant. They recently imploded the cooling tower, and everybody cheered. It looked like the end of an era. Is nuclear energy heading for a comeback?
Well, the nuclear energy industry would say it is. They've spent over $200 million convincing everyone it's the answer to global warming, and that's a lie, because nuclear power produces a lot of carbon dioxide in the production of uranium fuel and enriching and building the reactor and storing the waste. In fact, the nuclear power cycle is embedded in the oil cycle. Without oil, you can't create the fuel and you can't care for the radioactive waste and keep it cool for 500,000 years. And we're running out of oil. We've reached peak oil. So what are we going to do, leaving a legacy of hundreds of thousands of tons of the most deadly stuff known to the human race, which leaks into food supplies and bioconcentrates in food, and you can't taste, smell, or see it, which is highly carcinogenic, which will not be able to be cared for because we're using all the oil to drive our stupid SUVs. And I say stupid, and I mean stupid, if you've seen Al Gore's film. So I've only just realized that as we run out of oil, what the hell are we going to do with the nuclear waste?
The ultimate irony will be having these pools of nuclear waste being cooled by solar power.
Well, I suppose we could do that if we really got into solar. And in fact, I'm about to write a roadmap with some scientists for a totally carbon-free future with no nuclear power. And it's absolutely feasible to do that now. We just have to get the politicians off their behinds, get them away from the people who fund them, like the nuclear power industry, the weapons industry, and the coal and oil industries, to represent the people and not their funders.
Well, you know, the biggest argument that I keep hearing is that it doesn't emit greenhouse gases.
Well, it's a lie. When you dig up uranium, you have to, and in my book, The New Nuclear, what is it called? Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, which has just come out. The first chapter deals with that. So you have to dig up hundreds of thousands of tons of rock, then from that extract the uranium, and from that enrich the uranium. Takes 2 1,000 megawatt coal fire plants in Paducah, Kentucky, to enrich the uranium itself. Huge amounts of fossil fuel are used to mine the uranium ore. Then you've got to build the reactor, and making concrete is very CO2 producing. And then you've got to store and cool the waste for a long time and then transport it. At the moment, you've got 50,000 tons of high-level waste sitting in what they call euphemistically swimming pools beside the reactors, which is so potently toxic. There's much more waste in the cooling pools than there is in the reactors themselves, all of which are subject to terrorist attacks. So, in fact, at the moment, a nuclear power plant produces 30% of the CO2 as a similar-sized gas-fired electricity generator. But within a few decades, a nuclear power will produce not one net calorie of energy because of all the fossil fuel that's used to go into mine the uranium. Why within a few decades? Because the high-grade ore, the concentrated uranium, will all have been used up.
Okay, so, and then the nuclear industry says, but we have these reprocessing plants. And here's a quote from an article in Wired magazine that came out in February of 2005. And it said, in the short term, reprocessing would maximize resources and minimize the problem of how to dispose of radioactive waste. In fact, it would eliminate most of the waste from nuclear power production. Over decades, it could also ease pressure on uranium supplies. The world's existing reserves are generally reckoned sufficient to withstand 50 years of rapid nuclear expansion without a significant price increase. In a pinch, there's always the ocean, whose 4.5 billion tons of dissolved uranium can be extracted today at 5 to 10 times the cost of conventional mining.
5 to 10 times the cost. Huge amounts of money would be taken to extract uranium from seawater. One. Let me tell you what reprocessing is, because I can't stand the way these fellows lie. You take the radioactive fuel rods from a reactor, which is so radioactive, if you stand next to one of them, half an inch thick and 12 feet long, for a couple of seconds, you'll get such a dose of gamma radiation, you'll die within weeks of acute radiation sickness. And they're also thermally very hot.
How long do they stay radioactive?
They stay thermally hot for about 10, for hundreds or thousands of years. But although the gamma radiation cools off a bit, but thermally hot, they have to be cooled continuously for about 10 years before they cool a little bit. Then what they do, reprocessing means you dissolve them in concentrated nitric acid in a big vat. And from this witch's cauldron of thermally hot, radioactively hot stuff, you remove plutonium. And each reactor makes 500 pounds of plutonium a year. 10 pounds is critical mass. That's all you need to make yourself a bomb. You remove the plutonium. Now, you can run a reactor not with with uranium, but with plutonium. It is one of the elements that actually fissions like uranium. The Hiroshima bomb was a plutonium bomb. So what they want to do is make reactors called fast reactors fueled with tons of plutonium, cooled with liquid sodium. And if you've ever done chemistry, you'll know that sodium spontaneously ignites if exposed to air and explodes. So if you've got a crack in the cooling pipe with circulating sodium, you lose your coolant, the plutonium heats up, and not only will it melt down like Chernobyl or Three Mile Island, but it will explode with a nuclear explosion, scattering plutonium to the four winds. Plutonium being the most toxic substance known to the human race, such that a millionth of a gram will cause cancer. Hypothetically, if you had a few pounds, you can't, but if you could, put a piece of that, you know, plutonium in every person's lung on Earth. That's a carcinogenic dose for everyone on Earth. Its half-life is 24,400 years, so it lasts for half a million years. That's their answer to the endless supply of nuclear power. Now, what happens is the plutonium fissions to turn into strontium-90 that causes bone cancer and leukemia and only lasts for 600 years, not half a million years. So they say that's the answer to radioactive waste because we're cutting it down to 600 years. For God's sake, there are three generations every 100 years. So that's a lot of generations in 600 years. They have no idea, these physicists. Have they ever helped a child die of cystic fibrosis, which is my specialty, or leukemia? Do they know how precious life is? Do they know what they're playing with? I mean, talk about a witch's cauldron of the most toxic substance on Earth. They don't know what they're talking about.
But the argument is, but this is cheaper than
it's
the alternative.
It's not cheaper. It's by orders of magnitude more expensive. And reprocessing itself is terribly expensive and filthy. The workers get exposed to radioactive materials. A lot escapes, like radioactive iodine, which causes thyroid cancer. Noble gases, xenon, krypton and argon, which irradiate the ovaries and testicles. I won't go into it now, how they do. Increasing incidence of genetic disease. And then you've got to make the plutonium fuel rods, terribly expensive, terribly dangerous, and put the plutonium in a reactor. And those reactors have never worked. Read my book, Generation 4 Reactors, and see how the nuclear industry consistently lies. Nuclear power is not the answer. I mean, as a physician, I can't tell you how cross it makes me, because we can't cure most cancers. We can cure a lot of childhood cancers, but not adult cancers. Have you ever seen a person die of cancer? The pain they're in, the absolute degradation as they become incontinent, and lose their mental faculties as the cancer metastasizes to the brain. Nuclear power is a cancer industry. It has a transient byproduct, which is electricity production. It's just a way of boiling water by fissioning uranium. But what really it makes is radioactive waste and cancer for the rest of time.
You know, when you start putting it like that, it seems absurd that we would even be considering this. Because what do you think is behind this push to build all these nuclear power plants?
Oh, males? Testosterone? I mean, the nuclear power industry is an offshoot, a daughter, if you, or a son, of the nuclear weapons industry, and was designed by the bomb makers to make them feel better because they felt so guilt-ridden about Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the fact they'd made up enough bombs to blow up the planet. So they thought if they harness atoms for peace, too cheap to meter, sunshine units, then they'd make themselves feel better. But they knew, and I knew those men before they died, they knew how dangerous the waste was. They knew what they were doing. And the nuclear industry now, you see, it's being run by people who aren't very well educated because the physicists who really knew are getting old now. Many of them are dying, and a lot of young people are not getting into nuclear power because it's expensive. Wall Street will not invest in it. Standard & Poor's will not invest in it. It's a socialized industry. It cannot exist without huge government funding. And it amuses me to think that in America you would have a very big socialized industry in a land of, you know, free enterprise and capitalism and the like. What's the matter with Americans to buy this stuff, to even contemplate the fact that all your tax, not all, but many tax dollars will go to subsidize a few nuclear power plants? Don't buy the propaganda. Don't allow yourselves to be lied to. Practice critical thinking. Learn, understand, read the literature. Read my book. And, you know, I invite you not to believe a thing I say, but for God's sake, do your research.
I think that's part of what's going on here, is there's a tremendous amount of money behind the nuclear industry,
mm-hmm.
and that's all government funded at this point, is what you're saying.
Well,
basically,
$13 billion last year were allocated to nuclear power by the Senate, and that will only help to build 5 nuclear power plants. Will make not one whit of difference to global warming. In fact, as I said, nuclear power increases global warming, and it's a steal, a theft from very cheap energy production, which will provide all your energy needs with solar, wind. Farmers in the Midwest now make more money out of having wind farms than growing food. You can save 28% of the electricity you currently use by turning off your lights.
That's...
You should only have one light globe in the house in which you're operating, in the room in which you're operating. You should turn off all your VCRs, all your blinking lights. That sucks a lot of juice. Do not use clothes dryers. Hang your clothes out in the sun. Hang them up by the furnace in the winter. Don't use dishwashers. Put some water in the sink and wash it, and don't run the water continuously because that's a lot of very expensive. Just have the water in the sink and wash your dishes by hand. You know, it's a meditative thing. But think before you act. Every door that opens in front of you automatically is adding to global warming or nuclear waste. Escalators use nuclear power or coal. You know, we don't need all this electricity. Think, Mozart wrote by candlelight. Maybe we need to go back to horses and carts. When I was a little girl, the bread was delivered by a horse and cart. My father used to walk around with a bucket and a shovel, picking up the manure to grow the beans. I mean, we need communities where people can walk and buy their bottle of milk, or not to drive 10 miles or 20 miles to a supermarket in their SUVs. Go and see Al Gore's film. You know, a major, major
that was
contribution.
Tremendous. Yeah. Well, you know, before you got here, we had some callers calling in, and one of them said that one of the good things about, like, wind and solar is you have a decentralized power system. And I think if you're producing your own power, you get rid of that illusion that it's coming from somewhere else and it's unlimited.
And it's much more efficient because you use that source. You know, an incandescent light bulb is 1% efficient. By the time you generate nuclear power or coal, transport the electricity over the grid hundreds of miles, And then a lamp, actually most of the energy is heat, not light. It's 1% efficient. Even the efficient globes are only 3% efficient, generated at the source. And the government should be subsidizing solar power for every single house, mandating every building is retrofitted to be a solar collector. Solar hot water systems are very cheap, extremely efficient. The government should be subsidizing that every single person has a Prius, a hybrid car, instead of spending $700 billion a year on weapons to kill people. That's the socialist industry, the weapons industry. It's a killing industry. America has no right to go overseas and kill people to get more oil, to drive more cars, to cause global warming, to cause the polar ice caps to melt, to raise the seas 6 meters, to drown the planet. I mean, we've got to start thinking generically, responsibly, the way doctors think about their patients in the intensive care unit.
Okay, and I just want to mention the events coming up. Let's see, there's going to be a film about Dr. Caldicott, Helen's War, Portrait of a Dissident, and this is today at 6 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater. Tickets are $6, and you can buy them at the theater. And then tonight, 4:30 to 5:30 at the Blue Olive, which is at 4627 Northeast Fremont, there's going to be a reception, and you can meet Dr. Caldicott. There's a $50 donation. If you have questions about that, you can call Teresa at 503-475-0051. Now, Australia, I know New Zealand is nuclear-free, your neighbor there, but Australians, how do they feel about nuclear power?
Oh, they're really out in the poppies at the moment. We've got a horrible little Prime Minister called John Howard, who's a sycophant to George Bush. And I think there's a deal, you know, I think George Bush said, look, we've got 50,000 tons of high-level waste, we don't know what to do with it, do you want to put it in Australia? John Howard came back from a big visit to Washington recently saying, well, we're going to have nuclear power in Australia. And I think that's a Trojan horse, because Australians would not accept that. But we've got 40% of the world's richest uranium, and what he wants to do is enlarge the uranium industry, put enrichment plants there probably to help America, and also maybe bring back your radioactive waste. So we've got a big debate going on at the moment. Unfortunately, Australians were well educated about this. They all understood the dangers of plutonium, for instance, in the 80s. But then there's a new generation, and they've forgotten, and they're fed with all this consumerism stuff and this rock music, and they don't quite get it. So we have to re-educate them again. And so Australia is playing a major role, because we're cancer exporters when we export uranium. And we have to get them back on the track again. However, a lot of our media is run by Rupert Murdoch, who happens to be an Australian.
A big supporter of nuclear energy.
Well, I mean, we're in terrible trouble. And the media is determining the fate of the Earth. And if ever they need to get on the right track and print and broadcast the truth, the medical truth, the scientific truth, it's now. So I guess we're in a mess like you're in a mess.
But I have more hope
for Americans. I think you're nicer people than Australians. We're a bit cynical, and we don't tend to listen to people too much. But Americans are decent people, and I think there's more hope that they'll rise up and do the right thing. Funny, eh?
Okay, well, we are out of time, but Dr. Caldicott, thank you so much for coming by.
That's my great pleasure.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. The program Press Watch was made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's gay and lesbian community Yellow Pages, providing a wide array of gay-friendly business listings. More information at 503-230-7701 or www.pdxgayyellowpages.com. Coming up on KBOO at 10 o'clock, we have Carlos Chavez hosts Chicanismo. He speaks with a representative from Human Rights Watch about human rights violations in detention centers. At 10:30, art-focused host Julie Bernard speaks with artist Zachary Kircher whose work is included in the Oregon Biennial, now at the Portland Art Museum. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, the Justice Department has ruled FBI agents were justified in the fatal shooting of Puerto Rican independence leader killed during a raid on his home. Oil industry watchdog Chuck Hamill asked questions about whether BP purposely allowed its Alaska pipeline to become corroded. Also, scientists are trying to control one of the worst environmental disasters ever to hit Lebanon. And a progressive activist grills Israel's ambassador to the United States on Israel's targeting of civilians and use of cluster bombs in Lebanon, Israel's nuclear arsenal, and its lack of adherence to the United Nations Security Council resolutions. First, we have a couple of important messages.
People who have background in nonviolent communications, nonviolent conflict resolution, visioning, working together, being positive, that's really important.
Hi, I'm the KABU Board President, Orion Gray. Have you considered running for the KABU Board of Directors? KABU members who are interested in governing the best darn nonprofit in Portland, now's your time. The board is doing exciting work right now, and we want people with great skills and interpersonal strengths to be a part of it. If this is you, submit your 500-word statement to Ani Haynes by Friday, August 11th at volunteer@kabu.org. More information in this month's listener guide. In the meantime, come on down to a board meeting and get a feel for it. Sunday, August 6th, Saturday, August 26th, and Saturday, September 16th. Good things are in the works. Be a part of it.
A good board member needs to be patient, reasonable, and a good listener. It's very practical. I think you have to be somewhat practical on a board.
We are at the crossroads of choice. As reproductive rights are challenged, it has become more important than ever to know where we are on choice issues, both nationally and locally. KABU Community Radio joins In Other Words Women's Book and Resources, located at 8 Northeast Killingsworth and Williams, and co-sponsoring a discussion about what today's legislative battles will mean for the women of tomorrow. Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon, Michelle Stranger Hunter, will speak at, In Other Words, on Wednesday, August 23rd at 7 p.m. Check out www.inotherwords.org for complete details. That's at the Crossroads of Choice on Wednesday, August 23rd at 7 p.m. A co-sponsorship by your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM.